Hey there, welcome to Voices of Your Village. This is episode number 21. I get a lot of requests for topics and I love it. I want you to please keep throwing them my way. The whole point of this is to create content that you love and that you want. And one that I'd gotten kind of over and over was body exploration. I was getting questions like, at what age is it appropriate to do X? How do we explain this to them in a developmentally appropriate manner? My son found his penis. Will he ever stop playing with it? So I reached out to my friend Jenna, who I have known, goodness, for a long time, since I was a tiny human. We grew up together, and she has a master's in early childhood, and she also has two kiddos. She has a little girl who's 5 and a little boy who's 3. And so we dove into both her experience and my experience and what is developmentally appropriate from the early childhood perspective and answered all these questions y'all had. So we didn't hold anything back. So if this is not a conversation that you are ready to have yet or a topic you're ready to cover with a tiny human who's in your presence, hit pause and come back to it. We use a lot of terms in here that you might have to explain if you haven't already. So, all right, let's dive in.
Welcome to Voices of Your Village, a place where parents, caregivers, teachers, and experts come to support one another on this wild ride of raising tiny humans. We combine decades of experience with the latest research to create the modern parenting village. Let's dive into honest conversation about real parenting challenges so it doesn't have to be this hard. I'm your host, sleep consultant, child development specialist, and passionate feminist, Alyssa Blass Campbell. Hey, Jenna, thanks for joining me today.
What's up, Alyssa?
Can you start us off with a bit about who you are?
Sure. I am Jenna Chu. I am a wife to Thomas Chu and a mother to Mabel Chu, who is 5, and Maslow Chu, who is 3. I live in Rochester, New York, and I own and operate an indoor play space for children and families under the age of 7. I have a background in early childhood education and definitely have a teacher mentality in a lot of the things that I do.
Yeah, and little fast fact, Jenna and I grew up together.
You did.
So go back way far.
Yep. The rural town of Portville, New York.
That's right.
Comes full circle.
But Jenna is someone that I often turn to with early childhood questions. She has the early childhood background and also is a mama of these two babes. And just like generally love her vibe. So
thanks, man.
Yeah, dude. Nice. But so I had received this question about body exploration and the tiny humans and was like, help, Jenna, come talk to me.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's not super comfortable to talk about, but it's a very real thing that comes up literally every day of my life. So
Let's go into that. Like what, how does it come up in your everyday life, Jenna?
Okay. So, well, when you asked me if I wanted to talk about this topic, my example was that my 5-year-old was in the bath and literally out of nowhere was like washing your hair, washing your arms, you know, doing all the things. And then it was like, hey mom, my vagina is getting stretchier and longer, or something like that. And I was like, oh, okay. And my initial reaction, it's always shocking to hear those words come out of a 5-year-old. And your initial reaction got to be like, oh, don't touch, stop doing that. This is awkward and uncomfortable. But what I actually said was, oh, cool. That's important because you're growing and your whole body needs to grow. So it's like these things come up like in like 30 seconds. They're here and gone. But that's, it happens all the time.
For sure. And when do you feel like it started happening?
You know, interestingly, I feel like it happened for Maslow earlier. Just a lot of touching of the penis, you know, like diaper changes, very curious about what's going on. Mabel, she was a little older. I mean, Maslow's probably like 1 and Mabel was probably closer to like 3. But like when she got into it, she like just went full like, hey, what is this? What's this doing? Why do I have this? What's yours about? And like, asked a lot of questions, whereas Maslow's more like, and I don't know if it's a gender thing or if it's personality, but he is more just like, hey, I have this thing. So, and we're just like, yeah, that's a penis. And he's like, okay, cool. And that's that.
Yeah, so I like that you guys have always labeled things anatomically correct.
Yeah, we have.
I think it's very important. So I actually was changing a little girl's diaper, and she said, I want to touch my vagina. I was like, well, that's your vulva. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Right. But I think
if you're going to say, you might as well label it correctly, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And yeah. I think that like, it's uncomfortable for a lot of people. And I've actually learned that like some people don't know what a vulva is, which is a whole, I guess, other thing, or maybe we should definitely be saying these words to tiny humans. But one thing that I really want to dive into here is like, what is normal and what does that even mean, right? Like at what ages can you expect things? And just so that we can kind of be prepared, right? Like we're not expecting our infant to be like, I have a penis. So at what point do we kind of prepare to cross that bridge?
You know, I would say expect the exploration literally as soon as they can find their genitals, because it's going to happen, and not because there's any kind of like sexual anything behind it, but because it's a part of their body. And don't we all want to know what our body is doing and what it's for? And so literally, like as soon as they can reach down there, they're going to try to figure it out. The language part of it will come when their language comes. And when they start really realizing, you know, bathroom things and seeing their parents or their caregivers going to the bathroom. And, you know, so the questions will come up. And as long as the language is there, I think it's an appropriate time to start labeling it correctly and, you know, explaining, just being like totally upfront about it.
Was it Maves who, like, when Maslow was little, was like, when is he going to have a vagina too?
Oh, like totally. Yeah. Or was it that? Or was it her asking if she was going to grow a penis or something? But it is, yeah, it's that it was, it's still a conversation in our house because it's confusing. Like, okay, wait, no, that's my brother. Like, we're the same in so many ways, but now something's very different about us. So, yeah, and we're just like super firm. Like, yeah, you have a vagina forever if that's what you choose to do, and Miles doesn't have a penis forever if that's what he would like to have forever. So, it's just, yeah, being totally open about it.
I think it's and, good. You know, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I want to lay a foundation that I'm not gonna have to like go undo later. So I think Thomas and I, and we're totally on the same page about this, you know, just being absolutely open and honest and fact-based, because really, like, we're talking about science here. So let's just give them the facts.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it pulls away the shame too of just like having body parts and knowing,
oh my gosh, I know,
how to talk about them.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, if you label it scientifically, then it's just, it is what it is. There's no, it's not embarrassing. It's just your human body. So yeah, I think we like totally strayed from the original question.
No, that's okay. Came out.
But yeah, I think it just can, I don't know. I think the answer is it can come out at any age. And I think it depends on the kid.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Yeah.
And what have you guys done in terms of like, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer here, but if you're willing to share what you've done in terms of like your bodies and being like naked around your kids or like all that.
Yeah, I shower with Maslow hates showers, so he won't take a shower, but Mabel and I shower together still. I'll take a bath with the kids. And I think we just, you know, kind of set the same rules that you would for any other human body. You know, this is my personal space. I am comfortable being naked around you, but please don't touch me because this is my body and I won't do that to you. And that seems to work for our family.
It's awesome. I feel like there's a little more like a judgment when it's a dad.
You know, interestingly, yeah, that I think it hasn't happened in our house, but I think, I don't know why. I guess maybe just because Thomas showers in the morning before work and then it's just like, his day is done. I don't know. I don't know why. Not, it didn't happen on purpose that way. But I agree. Like, if it came up, I would be like, oh, that might be weird. Or yeah. Maybe like more for like Mabel and Matt and or Mabel and Thomas, I would probably be less comfortable than Thomas and Maslow showering together. Yeah, not, I don't know why, because I mean, he literally wipes your butt still. So I don't know, you know?
Yeah, totally. I think it's so interesting because like, I think especially you were a breastfeeding mom. And so you should have a different like physical relationship with them in general. I'm sure.
Yeah, that's true.
About like, even, you know, you grew Maslow and I'm sure maybe you guys have talked about that. Like you've talked about what body has done in a way that you probably haven't about Thomas's.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's very true. Yeah, it is interesting to think about.
Yeah. One thing that I'm thinking about is like, when do we introduce the concept of like public versus private? Like it's okay to kind of like be naked here, but not here or whatever.
This is actually a very big problem for our family right now because Maslow, we just got a puppy and the puppy pees outside and Maslow is now just obsessed with peeing outside. And it's a problem because he can't pull up his pants. So he's like, pants, underwear to the ground, and then literally like hobbling through our backyard trying to find me so that I can help him. And I struggle with that. I don't want to care, but I do. I'm still kind of figuring out why. Like, I'm not sure if I care because it's going to make other people uncomfortable or if I like fear the capabilities of other people. Because when Mabel was that little, I didn't really care that much. Like, she was like naked in our yard a lot. And now that Maslow's doing it, I stop him. And like, I make him, I insist that he wears clothes in our yard all the time. I mean, we live in the city and, but we know our neighbors, they're cool. But yeah, it is a problem. So we're actually, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question because we're kind of figuring it out.
What language do you use to like ask him to put clothes back on?
I just say that's okay inside our house. If you want to be naked, you can go inside, but it might make other people feel uncomfortable if you don't have clothes on, which has happened. And maybe that's why we've had like our neighbor across the street is a retired gentleman and he has come over when the kids were naked in the yard and he was definitely uncomfortable. Like he came to the fence and was like, oh, whoa, dude. And so I don't know. I think my reaction then was like, yeah, they're kids and they're playing in the pool and whatever. But seeing him feel uncomfortable then was like, maybe I should be uncomfortable too. So yeah, we just kind of say it's cool. Like you can be naked in the house. We don't care, but they might make other people uncomfortable. So
it's interesting.
I get it. They're fine.
I think the idea of like other people's comfort is something I hadn't really thought of, but Zach and I have talked a lot about this idea of like almost like sexualizing young girls' bodies when we do things like throw a top on them, but not a boy. Like I'm picturing like at the beach.
Right.
The
pool. Yeah.
And
you know, I let Mabel run around topless in the backyard still. So for some reason that doesn't bother me. But I know it bothers other people.
Yeah, exactly. It does.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I've seen like people post pictures of their kids topless, like little girls topless on Instagram or whatever. And I've seen like negative reactions to that. Yeah, which is interesting.
And at what point then, like, what point do you think you will say to Mabes, like, hey,
I know.
Gotta throw
I don't
top.
Know. I know. I haven't thought about that.
It's interesting. That's something.
It is interesting. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe soon. I don't know. I don't know.
And like, but why?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
You got to cover this up now.
Right. That is interesting. I'm trying to think of like me as a kid. I don't know. It was a little different because we grew up on acres and there was literally neighbors or anyone else to feel uncomfortable or, you know. But
you also
know.
Have
I think
like
that,
a hippie mom who is amazing and I could see just being like, whatever, be naked.
Yeah, I know. It's hard because we definitely, yeah. Hey, Danielle, little girl who didn't wear underwear until like she was like 9, sister. My mom was just like, whatever, it's a skirt. I don't care. I'm not going to fight that battle. And she did it. And it was fine. And it was totally fine. So, yeah. I don't know. It's, yeah, it's so tricky because it is a lot about your comfort level, but it is, you know, we live with other humans around. And so, I don't know.
There's yeah, no right well, it's just, so. It, for me, there are no right answers. But for me, it's this idea of like, I don't know, for girls, I see it as like sexualizing their bodies when we cover them mm-hmm. up. And I don't yeah. feel that way about boys. I'm like, no, your penis shouldn't be out at the beach. Right? But like,
right.
I don't know why.
We do. Yeah. It is interesting. Well, because like, I guess like a flat chest, like it looks boy-like. Like you see that on like a grown, like that chest looks like a grown man, which is also okay to be naked. So maybe that's just our, it doesn't look
right.
Like you don't have breasts yet. So
it's not yet a quote, you know, private part.
Yeah. 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 But yeah, I agree. If you ask him to cover it up now. Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting because now I'm going to think about that, and every time Mabel's outside, I'm going to be like,
sorry.
What kind of decision should I be making right now?
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And now we're back with a whole new podcast about unsticking it, launching in January. What happens when life gets in the way of our creativity instead of nourishing it?
We talk to all sorts of guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
So, join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom.
Get out of there, life gunk.
Let us help you get back to your best creative self. Look for Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, starting in January.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. Because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking it. I feel like one of the places I've seen the most like body exploration is like on the diaper table.
Mm-hmm. Where yeah, or in bathtub. Bathtub is big for us.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably see a change table. Yeah. But like in a school setting type. But yeah, for us, it's now bathtub for sure.
One of the things that we say is like, I'll let them touch their penis or their vulva or whatever. And I'll just ask them, like, let me know when you're done. And, but mm-hmm. then eventually like, there are times where I'm like, all right, I have to cap this. Like we have to do another.
Yeah. Just for the sake of time.
Exactly. They're like, all right, on my terms.
Yeah.
I'm also though, like when I taught preschool, I had this kid, we'll call him Jack, and Jack was 3 years old and he would just like loved his penis. And so he would say things like, Miss Alyssa, can I just touch my penis? And we would have to like put limits on
yeah.
like, when he could and where he could. So we'd say like, you can touch your penis when you're in the bathroom. He'd be like, Miss Alyssa, just a little bit. We're like, no, you can touch your penis at nap time. Right. So like,
yeah,
this is another conversation that I've had with so many parents about this, the like masturbation piece with
kids. Yeah.
And for me, I feel like I don't see it a lot actually in toddlers, but I did when I taught preschool, like it was definitely on the scene. A lot of kids would touch themselves before they fell asleep and make, I think like in all fairness, like for good reason, makes a lot of adults uncomfortable, largely because I feel like most adults masturbate in private.
Right.
And so now it's like, bah, I'm present for this. No, but I feel like preschool age is just like a time that we do have to be prepared for like the masturbation. I don't know if it's
yeah,
even.
Yeah, I haven't experienced that yet, but I do. I have talked to other parents and it's super normal. I mean, and again, like there's no, I think what we get so uncomfortable about is thinking that there's some kind of like sexual drive behind it, but really it's just exploration based. And, you know, kids want to know their bodies. So if we look at it, if we, you know, kind of take our adult perspective out of it and look at it from, you know, and literally the innocence of a child's perspective, then it seems less scary if you, you know, if you can kind of just switch that.
Yeah, for sure. And I think like, I guess like setting boundaries or figuring out for you, like, what are the boundaries that you yeah. want to hold? Mm-hmm.
And it's good to know too, like, it's okay. Like, if you want to set very specific parameters on when you think it's okay for your kids to do exploration, that's cool. But just be consistent with those and make sure that you're giving the kids at least something, because there's, you can say no, you can say no touching, and it's not going to happen. Like, right. the kids are just going to do it anyway, but then it's going to become a problem. And that's what we don't want to happen. We don't want it to become, you know, like just an issue. You don't want it to be a fight or to not be on the same page with your child about it, because ultimately in, later in life, that's going to lead to them not trusting you about these things that you want them to come to you with. So if you can just be like on the same page and be like, yo, like, it's cool if you, you know, if you want to touch your penis, go to your room. And honestly, I say it to Maslow like once a day. And then I always, like, I have to follow up with, and like, just remember, if you touch your penis, then you have to wash your hands. And honestly, sometimes that's enough for him to be like, I don't feel like washing my hands, so I'm not going to touch my penis right now. I don't know why it works, but it does. So sometimes he's like, yeah, I don't feel like going to the bathroom after. So I don't know. But just like setting those limits, saying there's a time and a place, and at the dinner table isn't the place.
Right. So you have to go wash your hands.
Yeah, exactly. like honestly, he'll like touch his penis and be like, you, now you have to get up and go. So like next time, before you do that, you have to think about like, what's the, like, you know, what's going to happen next year, the consequences of your actions. So he seems to be getting it, which is pretty impressive for a 3-year-old. So
nice. I have these, and like every childhood picture, my little brother is like holding his penis, and I just have these memories of my mom being like, Zach, just stop holding your penis.
And you know what's so interesting? I have a resource for you, but I was revisiting this resource once we said we were going to talk about this, and that is the security thing, which I did not know.
That is interesting. Yeah. What is the resource?
Oh, it is, let me pull it up. Sexuality Resource Center for Parents.org. And it's awesome. It's super, super cool. It's 0 to 18 years old, literally stage by stage, what's normal, red flags, you know, the messages you want to be sending, and then like what, by age 5, what do you want your child to know about their own sexuality? By age 10, what should they know? And different pointers on how to make sure that they're getting these messages.
So that's crazy cool. I think that that's very helpful for us to like kind of think about in the long term of like, what do we want to establish?
We
use the phrase start as we wish to go on a lot. And
that's a good one. I love that.
I think it applies to a lot in early childhood, because a lot of the times we set up these parameters and then we're trying to undo them.
Which is so much harder than just doing it, like thinking about it, putting the thought in at the beginning, and then it will unfold, you know, in a healthy way versus being like, oh, wait a minute. I mean, it happens. We're, you know, we're all human, and sometimes we make decisions that we do have to undo, but the more we can think ahead, the easier our job as a parent will be later.
For sure. Well, and like, I think the hard part is knowing like, what does the foundation look now for this goal that I have down the road, and being able to like work backward. So I don't often wear bras. It's like something I just don't really do.
They're super uncomfortable.
And I just,
and actually not good for humans to wear.
Really?
Especially push-up bras are very bad. They, and I think probably all bras just in general, because they actually like manipulate cells, which causes precancerous cells. So a little fun fact there.
Fun fact from Jenna Chu.
It's science.
Science. But yeah. So I think of that and I'm like, okay, like how can I with these tiny humans like set up this space where I'm sure that me not wearing bras does make some other adults uncomfortable. Like that being said, if I'm wearing a see-through shirt, like I'm gonna have a bra on or at least a tank top.
Right.
And sure. So
you're not trying to show the world your nipples. You're just trying to be comfortable.
Well, I don't even care if they see my nipples. I just know that it'll make them uncomfortable. So I think one of the like things that I'm really thinking about is just like, how do we kind of set kids up to live in this world and not make the rest of the world feel uncomfortable all the time, but also like be able to have like individuality and express themselves however they'd like, you know, while maintaining respect.
Right.
For their bodies, for other people's bodies, for the space, all that jazz.
Yeah. That is a tricky one. And I think I like to push the boundaries and the limits a little bit, but I admittedly live in kind of a comfort zone in some ways. So I think for me and my kids, I think I want them to kind of, I mean, push as much as they're comfortable, but always like know that it's okay to do things that aren't considered the norm. Even if it does make other people uncomfortable, you know, to a certain degree. And I think, I mean, from what I've seen so far, they both seem to have fully embraced that. So Mabel more than Maslow. She's no problems pushing limits in all ways. So, yeah. And that's a great you know, trait that I love that she has. Makes it sometimes challenging to parent, but I think it'll be awesome for just the world in general to have, you know, people like her who have no problems making other people feel uncomfortable in some ways. And
I think it's just like challenging people to look at their discomfort, right? And to look at like, ooh, why does this make me feel uncomfortable? I don't know. That's like maybe true. If there were more nipples you could see in shirts, then we wouldn't have to worry about normalizing breastfeeding. Like things like that just come to mind for me.
True.
What are we doing here?
Yeah, that's true. So then I guess my question would be, what do I say to my neighbor who comes over and is like, ugh? And I think what I said was probably like, oh, they're kids and it's not a big deal. And I don't know what he thought of that. So I guess, you know, what do we do? What do we say? How do we navigate that discomfort with people that we don't really know?
Yeah, for sure.
Settings where we're kind of forced to have some kind of at least topical relationship.
Right. I think like deciding what that boundary is going to be for you. So I'll use the example of like, say we had a little girl that was at the beach and she wasn't wearing a top, right? And like, say my uncle was like, why doesn't she have a shirt on, or she needs a top on or whatever? Like,
yeah,
just being prepared to say, oh, you know what? That's a choice that we're going to let her make when she gets older, whatever. If she wants to cover up, but just being ready to like, and like own that and be confident in where we're coming from here. So that like, I don't know, like I think our confidence in our responses is like huge.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. And yeah, it does come back to being prepared.
And they're going to have opinions, right? Like your neighbor's probably going to have an opinion about a million other parenting choices that
Yeah, he does.
And so like, it's just living with that comfort of like, he can have an opinion and you're still going to parent how you want to parent.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. And I think I do that in a lot of other, I'm very confident in a lot of my parenting choices. And I don't know, I guess like the shirtless one isn't just one that I've really like put a lot of attention in. But now that, I've already said it, I'm going to have to think about this one more. I think I haven't thought about how my choices are impacted by the discomfort of other people. And I think that's huge. So thanks for shedding some light on that.
Yeah, for sure. Giving you more stuff to think about here in parenting.
It's good. Yeah, no, never. There's never enough. I'm always so bored with all my parenting decisions. I wish I had more time to just sit around and be like, oh, how else am I making a bad decision here? Or just making my child's life the most beautiful thing in the whole universe.
You know, that's right.
It's balance.
As long as we let them know that therapy is an option, we know they'll be there for something.
Exactly.
That has like come up in terms of body exploration that you've chosen to ignore instead of respond to?
You know, the where do babies come from came up earlier than I was anticipating, and I dodged it for a little while. And Mabel was probably 4 when she asked, and I didn't, like, I said, like, a baby grows inside of the mother, and that was kind of it. And she, I think she might have asked, like, how does it get out? And I was just like, and I just kind of ignored it, like, literally just ignored it, and I didn't hear it. And then, like, gathered my thoughts, and then when it came up again, I was like, we're doing this. And so she asked again. So my sister is pregnant recently, and so there was a lot. Just a lot of questions. So when it came up again, I was like, okay, like that, I realized that what I did was wrong the first time, and that's okay. Like, it happens. They catch you off guard and you say the wrong thing sometime, or, you know, whatever, you don't think that that's, you respond inappropriately. And so when she asked the second time, I told her everything, and we talked about cesarean sections, and we talked about vaginal births, and that it's not a like you don't grow in a belly and it's called a uterus. And she loved it, took it all in, and then went to school and told all of her friends. So then another mom from school came and was like, oh, Mabel told my daughter that babies grow in uteruses, and then you can also, if you can't get it out of your vagina, it can be cut out by a doctor. And so I was like, well, now your daughter knows and you don't have to tell her.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So I just did, like, yeah.
That's so funny. When I taught preschool.
But Mabel also, go ahead. Like, let me just tell this funny thing. So then Mabel also, like, in the cesarean section conversation was like, she knows that I had 2 vaginal births. And she was like, why didn't you just ask the doctor to cut us out? Like, why did you push us out of your vagina? And I was like, girl, like, do you want the doctor to cut out your poop or do you want to push it out of your body? And she was like, oh yeah, I definitely want to push my poop out. Please don't ever let the doctor cut my poop out. It's like, yeah, like that is serious. And that sounds like so much more work. So she totally got it. She totally did.
That's awesome.
Like, that is no joke to have major surgery to have a baby removed from your body. And she was like, yeah, you're right. Like, that's amazing that women have their babies cut out of their body. I was like, yes, it is. And now she gets it. And then she's 5 and it's awesome.
That is awesome.
So, yeah.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're aiming more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
When I taught preschool, I had a kid come in to share like a sonogram. He had a growing sibling at circle time. So he shares this picture. He's talking about the baby. And somebody asked where the baby was. And he said, in my mommy's belly. And this other kid in my circle goes, nope, it's in her uterus. And it got there from your dad's penis.
Yes. See, kids just need each other. They don't even need us. Right? They just need like one parent to tell them, and then it just spreads like wildfire. It's amazing.
Obviously send an email that day and was like, so by the way, this is what your kid might be coming home saying.
yeah. Sorry. And it didn't come from my mouth, but it is fact-based.
But I'm not going to tell them they're wrong. So did you guys have to talk about that yet at all, about like how the baby got in there?
We have not talked about that. Mabel somehow knows that, and we did not have this conversation with her, but she does know that genetically a baby is half of their father. She told me that the other day, and I was just like, oh, I forget how she worded it. I think she was talking about Maslow and was like, Maslow, did you know that you're half mom and half dad? And I was like, cool. Hmm. But like, we didn't really dive into it. It was just kind of like in passing. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, if you ask a question about that, then we'll talk about that more. But she didn't. She was like content with the amount of information she had. So we're just going to sit there for a second while we can. Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to put, like, I am all about if they ask and the curiosity is there, then you give them the facts. But if they're not digging for information, I'm also not going to openly share it. So, yeah.
All right. It's fair.
Yeah. When they're ready, they'll let me know.
I like that approach.
I mean, maybe. Maslow probably won't. That's the problem. She's a lot more wordy and curious. So maybe she'll just tell him. Probably. If we just tell Mabel when she's ready, then she can just tell Maslow, right?
Yeah. No, for sure.
That's what siblings are for.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, she's going to be amazing. She's going to be so good. She's so funny. She loves facts and rules, and yeah, that'll be great. She'll parent him pretty soon, so that'll be awesome.
Phew.
Yeah, right? So just one and done. Just have to like, yeah, parent one, and then it'll all be good.
Yeah, you just have to raise that one to be like Mabel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good plan, Jen.
Yeah. I think so. I hadn't even really thought about it, but now that it's like coming out, it's brilliant, really.
That's awesome. So I guess like the overall takeaway here that I'm getting is that we should, you know, use fact-based information, right? When identifying parts and all that jazz. Be prepared for this earlier than we think.
Yeah.
And
because you're going to be caught off guard. Yep. They're going to catch you off guard. And it would be nice to be prepared before they catch you off guard the first time so that you could just handle it. But I think I was caught off guard. Although, you know, I feel lucky that I have the background in early childhood to know that, you know, we're using scientific terms. This is, you know, we're just talking about this, like the real deal. We're not giving any pet names or anything like that. And so I kind of had the foundation and then had to kind of navigate it as it came up. But yeah, be prepared. Check out this resource though, this Sexuality Resource Center for Parents. It's literally like anything you would want to know at any stage. And I would like looked ahead to like what's going on at 14 and 15 and 16. And it's heavy stuff. Like things that I have not yet even considered to, you know, thinking about. And yeah, it's good. I think now looking at this and looking ahead, I'm going to be a little bit more prepared.
Yeah. It's a great idea. So many other areas, we like look ahead to know like what to expect, but this is one we don't.
Yeah. I mean, I was like reading this one, and one of the things is like wet dreams are going to happen. And that's something that as a parent, I have not ever thought about. And that's a real thing that's going to happen in my life. I'm going to have to parent a child that's going to have wet dreams. And that's scary and real.
Yeah, I don't want
to. And now I'm going to be prepared. Yeah. Yeah. So it is. You just be ready.
Oof. And be I'm not consistent. Ready for that.
Yeah. No, dude, I'm not ready for that at all. That is scary to think about. Can't they just stay like under 5 for abs?
Right? That's where my wheelhouse is.
Yeah, man. I'm good to 7. You're good to 7, right?
Yeah, I can handle 7.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm scared. I'm scared for 8. 8 to 18. That's...
Then who comes in? Who comes in parents after 7?
Well, this is the scary thing in my house is that I'm 0 to 7 and then Thomas is 18 to like 21, 25 if you count grad students. And yeah, we got a gap. We got a lot of research to do. Hopefully, so the plan is just lay down a strong foundation until 7. Hope just like coast through and then Thomas will pick up when they're in college and then, you know, then they're going to be adults and they're going to be great.
That's right. He can at that point undo anything.
Yes, right.
It's a good plan. That gives me hope. Actually, Zach really likes like teenagers, which I don't get. But so our gap is like maybe a little smaller, but then we'll have to call on Thomas when they're in college.
Oh, he loves it. He would totally do it. He loves college kids.
It's rad. Somebody's gotta.
But then, oh God, can you think about this? What kind of sexuality conversations you're having with 18-year-olds? No, that's scary. No,
that's so scary. It's so scary. Well, so scary. Now I feel like we have a good handle on like birth to 5. I think. Like,
yeah.
It's tough.
Which is good. Foundation. It does, and it's uncomfortable when they're so young. But this is the foundation, man. You gotta get the language down. You know, start sending these messages about what their body means, you know, what it is, who it's for, what it does. And then when they're 18, they're going to have a firm grasp on this kind of stuff. So.
I like this.
Yeah.
Start as we wish.
I have a question. Did you grow up calling it a vagina, a vulva, or did you have a pet name?
Oh my gosh, definitely a pet name. You come on.
Yeah.
I was raised in a very Catholic family.
What was it?
Oh, I guess my hoo-ha. It was mostly not referred to.
Yeah, but, right?
Yeah. I guess my like hoo-ha was a term that was used.
So interesting. We called it our privates. And it was just like a blanket term for both like my brother and me and my sister. Which I think is a good start because it does tell you that it's just your own business, but it also didn't give me a lot of information about what it did or what it's for or how important it is. So, yeah,
and how to like communicate about it.
Right. Yeah. That's a big problem. I think that it's good. Like we've had conversations like Mabel's had some itchy things happen. And we're like, is it like your inner thigh or is it your vagina? Oh, it's your inner thigh. Cool. Okay. So that's maybe just like a rash. So it's been important to have these terms accurate.
Well, yeah. Thanks, Jenna. Thanks for coming on and chatting with me. Where can people connect with you?
Facebook, Instagram. You can follow our play space. Hippity Hip Rock is on Instagram. Can message me there.
Yeah, and it's Rock ROC.
I am the sole administrator. Or you can find my personal, just J Chu. Wait, is it? No, I think it's Jenna Chu on Instagram. Or Alyssa will just tag in all these things, right? Is that what you do?
Yeah, I can tag all the things. and I totally recommend the Hippity Hip Rock. I think like it's a beautiful, amazing play space that you've brought to the community where you can like come, you can have, yeah, I love that you have like coffee and like spots for adults to hang while their kids play. I mean, to have a space, especially in like upstate New York winters where you get out of the house and just go play.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's been awesome. It's been really cool for connecting people too. Like these conversations happen naturally in here, which is so cool. Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like most spaces that kids are in are not designed for kids, right? Like our houses aren't designed for kids.
Yeah.
And so to have
cafes a place are not, right. Restaurants are not.
Exactly. So to have a play space that they can go to inside to like literally just be kids and explore, where we're not like, don't climb on that. Don't do that with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been awesome. Yeah. We're loving it. Super cool. Okay.
Well, cheers to you, Jenna.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
Thanks for coming on and hanging out with me.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the show notes for this episode and all past episodes at voicesofyourvillage.com. If this podcast has helped you on your journey, please take 2 minutes to leave a review on iTunes. Thanks for joining forces with us to cultivate this modern parenting village.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests, too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.